Blog Talk Radio.
What up, everybody? It's your boy DJ Slick, rocking it here at 815, doing the RSG Real Sports Guys.
Right about now, you're about to be possessed by the sounds of MC Raw Face and DJ Easy Rock.
Enough with all that. This is DJ. What? No, this is Bill D. This is everybody else. This is all that other stuff. This is one mic, y'all. This is one mic where you got your man, the man D. Wills. You know, I just needed some space to breathe, y'all. You know, I've been hanging out, thinking, driving, and I said, you know, I wanted to just find some space where I could just talk. You know, if you are unfamiliar with Real Sports Guys, we are real guys who talk real sports. And we have a number of podcasts. And when you listen to us, you know, think of the year as like an album. And each time we do a segment, whether it's Inside the Park with Hank or just the mothership when I have my guy, the Game Changer, Mark's the Game Changer, and Phil PhD, the sports PhD on, and we're doing our segment. Each segment we drop is like one more song on the album. And so if you're going to our realsportsguys.com and you click, you hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, or even if you're downloading, a lot of folks download the podcast on iTunes, you're going to get a series of podcasts throughout the year. Hopefully that year will tell a story about our perspective. One mic is just one more opportunity like that. So I'm excited today because, you know, this is a space when I'm hoping to just, you know, the things I just talk about, you know, those of you who know me know that, you know, not only am I an avid sports person, I was a student athlete, something that I do for my research that I'm really interested in what is happening in sports, but I'm just a straight up fan at the end of the day. And so I'm the kind of person that's just going to have fun with it. And I want to create a space where all my worlds come together. You know, I might get too deep for some of y'all. I'm philosophical. That's where I got the research stuff. I might get a little crazy over there. That's where the cat sitting in the barbershop with his headphones on, saying, yeah, that brother said it right. And there are other times when I'm going to stretch us to think differently about what it is we're going to do. And then from time to time, I'll have some of our RSG personalities join me for this time, or some of our major contributors like I have today. I'm excited. My guy, Teron Briggs from Boxing.com and Examiner.com. You know, we're a site where, you know, we're kind of like we frame ourselves as sports radio's version of the Wake Up Show. You hip hop head, you know, remember, you know, King Tech and Sway before you had Sway in the Morning. Youngins are listening to Sway in the Morning, but back in the day, folks were listening to King Tech and Sway. And they still got their new version coming out, their more recent remix version coming out. They do now, but it's the place where, you know, Eminem was there first, or Biggie was doing some of this early stuff was there. So you have all these MCs that's where they went before y'all really heard them in broad distribution. And we do that for folks. And Teron Briggs is someone that will be that kind of person. He's going to turn up TV one time, and he's going to be on Showtime box, Showbox. He's going to be on, you know, featured HBO, because this is a guy that, oh, not only knows boxing, but he knows sports. So I'm looking forward to having him on a little bit later with us, and I'm excited about that. And so, you know, there are times when I might have a Game Changer on here, you know, breaking down his whole philosophy around when shares, you know, he always has something. PhD. You know, he studies. You know, this is a guy who's very analytic and studies, but he got a little qualitative to him as well. But he really thinks things through and it's always good perspective. Yeah, many of you are longtime listeners. Remember my guy and our good friend Ray, who's, as we say, been on sabbatical, but we'll be bringing him on the show as some of our other folks. And then you never know. You never know if PhD might branch off and do something. Because we like Wu-Tang. You know, you might turn it on. You might drop it with the single. Oh, hey, this is game-changing by himself, on his own. You know, you're going to hear, you might hear that. We're not quite sure if we're going to let Justin go. You know, PhD, I call him the Dr. Dre. You know, he makes things happen behind the scenes. I don't think he's going to let Justin drop his album anytime soon. You know, he watched Justin's like that great young MC. He might say something you don't want him to say, so we might put him on short kind of thing. But he might, you know, everybody else might drop that hour segment. He might be dropping that 15-minute segment until we know. We never know what's going to come out of his mouth, but he definitely can hang with me. And so that, you know, we're going to have some fun with this and keep this ball moving a lot today. And you know, like most of our shows, we'll develop and have some segments coming on that will be things that will hit some specific kinds of areas going on. But there's a lot going on in sports right now. You know, the habitual line stepper. See, we call these things before everybody else calls them. See, now the world, you know, when you end up on NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, you're the lead story before ISIS. Like, when you're the lead story before ISIS, you know you're in trouble. Like, when you are the person they talk about before they talk about the folks who are actually doing damage to folks on the world, you know, if I'm your attorney, I'm saying, get ready. Now, we've been talking about Goodell for a long time, and I'm going to say this. He has done a lot, and the brand itself grows itself, but he plays a role because the owners are defending him, and the product is strong, and you can't argue that. I think where we've always struggled, and this is one of the things that I want to hit on today, is this concept of due process. Like, we have lost the concept of due process. People who have been historically marginalized understand why due process is important. But we've gotten to this point where because we don't spend enough time building our own capacity to have difficult conversations, the easiest way to do it is napalm everything and just crush everything so you make sure you take care of it all rather than really nuance it. So what makes Sterling different than Danny Ferry? You know, what makes some of these different things? And so part of the problem that people have had with Goodell is that you can't understand the flow of his decisions and how the due process works and things don't add up. And, you know, you have people who are involved in domestic violence situations. They get two games. And then you got folks over here who are doing something that people might think is less of an offense and they get six games. And, you know, you have this, you have this situation in New Orleans and you're throwing a book at them and you told Sean Payton that, you know, ignorance isn't a reason for not being punished and you get him out of the year, but now you're trying to defend yourself like you didn't know. Now, Sean said he didn't know, but then he lost it. He was out for a year. You say you don't know and then we all supposed to forget it. And so that becomes a challenge when we talk about the habitual line stepper, because much like some of the challenges we have with the NCAA college sports, these things don't add up. And I think most of people, American people, can live with the fact that we just say we got a problem. We don't know how to fix it. We're trying to figure out how to fix it, but we admit we got a problem. Like, we know that these athletes are not making the money they should probably do, or we're not compensating them, or we're not really covering costs of attendance the way we need to, because every other student on campus gets that. The athletes are not getting any special favors. You know, they're only getting what every other student who goes to a public or private university gets. They get cost of attendance. And there's no weird thing about disadvantage for a kid who goes to Northwestern. That's the same thing for the general populace. We have students who get academic scholarships who are recruited like athletes, who they don't have those same conversations with about that. So when we don't have due process, when we don't think about some of these things, when we don't understand the processes, people get mad. And, you know, I've been a leader in a lot of positions and have understood, you know, that reaction and had to reflect on it, because it's a tough thing to juggle as a leader, and I understand that. That's why you always try to get good people around you. But now Goodell finds himself as a lead story before ahead of ISIS, which you got to work hard to be lead story on NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, who I love, ahead of ISIS. I mean, you've done something real bad and significant. And so what's going to happen with him? Well, the problem we have is the NFL's framework and lens for making decisions has been around money. The protective shield is really about protect the vault. It's about protecting the economic generation. And so that becomes a challenge when you are trying to make decisions might have a moral ground or setting to it. And so there goes your dilemma, because if all your decision-making has been through this certain framework, now you got to make a decision based on core values and everything else. Now you're in a quandary, because that lens can't work for how you might work with Goodell. It's not going to make sense. So the owners are supporting him, because this person has kept them out of a lot of different stuff, has been able to got them through the whole concussion and everything else with the least amount of damage, negotiate that. When people don't know how huge that is. In a general, like, you know, even having a baseline understanding of how we're going to do it on both sides, in which, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for that, because there are certain things, if you're a race car driver, if you're a certain kind of stuff, where there are hazards associated with that activity. And the NFL, frankly, as someone who played football, putting it tough, because we all know it when we play, we know the likelihood, we know what's going to happen. We are aware of all of these things, and a lot of this stuff has to do with our will to win as athletes, to be there, to extend ourselves probably longer than we need to. So it's a very complicated issue, but he found a way through it. So now you have this issue, and it's where sports and society comes together. And this, all it does is it demonstrates the fact that we have not as a society prepared ourselves to have these difficult conversations. And so when you add that ingredient of sports in it, and you have fanatics, which we all are, who really love sports, our judgment, the way we look at it, gets warped. Whether it's, you know, the women wearing jerseys supporting Ray Rice and justifying, you know, why he should have been able to hit her, to why owners, you know, have figured out how to justify, even though they said they got the videotape, 5 months ago, that, you know, it wasn't his fault. Even though he used that same lens to sit Peyton out for a year and miss a whole full year of coaching. So that money will cloud the judgment. And so the NFL is going to be in a tough position. But it's good for us to go through these things, because it allows for people to calibrate, to get back to norm where we think we should be. At some point, you get to that. You get so big that you forget how you got there. And sometimes you got to be brought back to the middle. Can he survive? Somebody's going to take the hit. Person in the mailroom, assistant. Because the person who did it, if it doesn't come up, was in the security side. The person who got the tape, in my mind, and I could be wrong, and maybe it's come out already, I haven't seen it, is on the security side. Because there's somebody over there who knew, who got a buddy, who worked, did a thing, gave him a call, and say, man, can I get a look at that? You know, it's a brotherhood. It's folks know each other. Hey, can I get a look at that? See, yeah, I'll send that over to you, man. Don't anybody know I sent it. He saw it. He's like, oh, man, I can't show this. And he held on to it, because he knew how damaging it was for the league. So somebody over there in the security side, it probably wasn't the head of security, but it's somebody, because there's a whole group of folks who got relationships. They hang out together. They're in New York City, in that whole area. They all hang out together. They know each other. Somebody got that information from there. And that's how it got over into the office and got the voicemail of the secretary. Boom. So they know who did it. They know who got it. They got that. So they're going to have to figure some of this stuff out and kind of work through. But at the end of the day, will the game be bitter on the other side? I think what's going to have to happen, and we talk about a lot of this stuff, it's complicated, is that there are a lot of things underneath this, whether it's what Ray Rice did, whether it's the NFL's attitude towards women or just NFL's ability to negotiate really tough social issues that have no boundaries, will show up in your stadium. It's going to be important that these are learning moments. And these things for the young people who end up being veterans in the league, this stuff starts in what we do with them when they're young people, what we do with them in college, the kinds of things that we force them to come to terms with as student athletes. So there's that piece that at every level of coach that's worked with, most of them, because usually the coaches are the important figures in these persons' lives, even if they have a tooth fairy home. And so there's that piece. There's a piece that how's that reinforced when you get to the league, even when you got money. You're taking somebody from being broke to being a millionaire, and what does that do? So you got all that in it. And then you got an organization that has to understand that they can't just say that they have this social responsibility. And they just can't get money to a cause. They got to figure out how they exhibit that through how they handle all these issues and who they have on their boards and who they have helping them make decisions moving forward. So a lot going on. We obviously will talk about that. We'll talk about that on our other shows and everything else. What's up? Danny Ferry. My goodness. Remember him at Duke. Now, the question is, was it a scouting report that he just read again and then read it? You heard the audio tape. Looked like he was just saying it. There were so many other ways to get at the issue that he probably was trying to get at. Does that raise to the issue of Donald Sterling in terms of where he is? He shouldn't have said it. But he's smart enough. He's a smart guy. He should have known he shouldn't have said it. And then you hear the guy like, he's going to end up on TMZ. I mean, does he need to be fired? I think he needs to be handled, heavily disciplined, suspended. I don't know if he needs to be fired, but I think it understands the power dynamics that exist in sports. You know, the majority of the executives, NBA has done a really good job of trying to diversify, whether it's men, trying to get more women and everything. But in pro sports, the decision makers are still pretty much dominant white males. And I'm not saying that against white males or not. I'm not trying to rip, but that's a cultural context in which people look at things, what they think is funny, what they think is okay. And until you create that, and this is a guy who has a very diverse, from my understanding, friendship group. So these are probably things he probably sit around and Billy King, they laugh around all the time, because in locker rooms you laugh about this stuff all the time that you can't do in these settings. And so, is this something he should be fired for? I'm probably not that deep on that. But it is something that he needs to pay attention to. And they should have had a much more, if you listen to our last podcast we had on the big show, I was saying that they needed to have a more sophisticated conversation about how do you build a brand in a transient community like Miami, like Atlanta, like Phoenix, where most of the people aren't from there. They've moved there. How do you brand that? Because if anybody's been to Atlanta, particularly with African-American communities, there's plenty of disposable income. It's where they're going to spend their money. There's some people, Atlanta's got a proliferation of other kinds of clubs down there where people spend money. Atlanta's got entertainment. Atlanta's like L.A. They got a lot of stuff people can get into that's always coming there all the time that impacts whether or not people end up going to the stadium or whether that they end up watching it from home. Their DirecTV subscription might be way up. A lot of people are trying to watch their Yankees because they're from New York. So they're trying to watch the Cubs because they're from Chicago. They're trying to watch the Bears. They're not really going to watch the Falcons or the Hawks, or they're trying to watch the Bulls. So how do you create the experience? How do you get people to love? What's your marketing plan around a community that's transient and one that might be younger, whatever? That's how sophisticated. You can have these things across segments and demographics, but you got to be a little bit more sophisticated in how you handle that. All right, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG. This is One Mike. If you want to check this out, go to realsportsguys.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're brought to you by On the Rocks, XL Academics, Frederick's Accounting, and our man LR at Resistance Digital Solution. This is D. Wills again, One Mike, and this is one of our new podcasts. As I said before, it's like we drop an album. We drop an album a year with several songs hitting you. Don't get caught up in dates and whatever. Our live, if you want to catch our live podcast, you'll see some notifications around that. But you can always catch us on iTunes. You know, I hear people, you know, listen to it when they're working out, the lawnmower, cutting it, whatever they're doing. You can always do it on your own way. So we're going to have my man, Teron Briggs from boxing.com, joining us here pretty soon to talk about the big fight tonight, as well as a whole bunch of other sports. You know, he's an up-and-coming cat. Looking forward to him, and so he'll be joining us soon. So I'm excited about that. Got a lot going on. I want to hit a couple points before Teron joins us. Now, some of you played football out there, and you had a quarterback who you felt like was playing for the other team because you like, they just can't keep throwing interceptions like that. Like there isn't a way in which they should be doing that. Tony Romo is that guy. And I was trying to figure out, like, what would you call a quarterback that, you know, we already got 12th man taken up in Seattle for the fan as the additional one. We can't give that person that name. What we call quarterbacker or a strong quarter safety or what do we call it? Because Tony Romo, you can't throw, so we have people who say, well, we're too hard on Tony Romo. The difference between Tony Romo is a good quarterback, being a great quarterback, and a lot of people try to push him towards that great quarterback potential. And the difference between being a good quarterback or average quarterback and a great quarterback is you don't throw that pass, that interception, right? And so if you take somebody like an Aaron Rodgers, he throws that interception maybe once every 2-3 years. Brady throws that interception maybe once every 5 years. Tate might throw a little more frequently that interception every 2 years, maybe. Tony Romo throws that interception 3 times a year for the last 6 years. He'll have a duel going with Peyton Manning. He'll be throwing for 340 yards, 3 touchdowns, and then he'll throw that interception with less than a minute to go. And that's the difference. And when you throw that interception, the kind of interceptions he was throwing first week looked like he was, you know, he might have been point shaving. He wasn't point shaving, but he is something about him that gets him so ramped up. You know, he's a Midwest kid, so I got a lot of love for him. I want to see him be excited, being successful, came from nowhere. So I got a lot of that. But you can't throw that interception. That's the difference. And if you're going to be great, you can't do that. You know, the only person I've seen really get away with that interception because he just had overwhelming success is Brett Favre. Brett Favre used to throw that interception. Remember, I was at the game in Philly where he threw it up in the air like it looked like a punt in the playoff game. I think when Freddie Mitchell, you know, the people's champ, you know, got the big catch from Donovan and closed the deal on the fourth down and long. But, you know, Brett threw that interception. And Brett's won enough big games, got a Super Bowl where you can build some credibility around throwing that interception. So I worry, you know, that they're going to have to figure that out because they don't have the luxury. The defense actually played well enough for them to win. You think they were going to give you anything. They gave you enough to do something, and he hurt them. And he's got to really work around. And some of the criticism, he got some defensive players. As a defensive player, you get frustrated. You don't mind if somebody makes a mistake trying, but you can't keep throwing that interception. And so he does that over and over and over again. And at some point, he has to be accountable for that. You know, Jerry can't keep bailing him out. All the coaches can't keep bailing him out. Somebody on his team got to challenge him, like, you got to stop making that interception. It's not you throw the interception early on, but you make that critical turnover. That can't be you. That's got to be someone else on the team. know, somebody catches it and fumbles, that's them. But that can't be you. You got to, you get the ball to them. And so it throws me off. It's crazy. You know, I'm trying to find a name. And so hit me up at RSGDLWILS, and let me know, what should we call quarterbacks that look like they're the 12th person on defense? Give me your name. What do you want to call it? Quarterbacker? Quarter safety? Quarter lineman? What do you want to call it? We can't call him 12th man because that's already taken up. Hit me up at D Wilson, at RSG D Wilson. Let me know what we should call that person, who that quarterback, who throws that in. All you defensive players out there know that quarterback. Well, you both look at you. Y'all look at each other like, is he playing for them? You checking their bank account. Like, did he get any money off of this? When they throw that interception. So these are the kinds of things I notice. A little crazy, a little different. I need to stretch and talk about that. Well, we're going to pay a few bills. I'll be back after.
Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
Yeah, check my boy LR out. This cat helped me out tremendously. Incredible heart. Follows up his service. He's trying to build. Again, people start with us. We're loyal. We're trying to help them get to the next level. He's also been on the show. You'll probably hear him come on with me. Has great about sports and whatever. I hope your fantasy leagues are going well. You know, because mine is, I had a crazy week. took another chance, and I got too smart. See, don't get too smart. I got too smart. So, and I went away from my one thing. You know, I'm a Steelers fan. Folks who listen for a long time know that. And I usually avoid drafting a lot of Steelers, defense or whatever. I just stay away from that. But this one, I did draft Ben because I felt like Ben is going to do something. And actually, I like the way he's been planning, throwing, not moving around. I mean, I like his sharp throws. There's some things they need to work on, but his mechanics look much better this year. But, you know, I figured Cleveland at home, they still got the debate going on. I figured, you know, boom. And then I got Matt Ryan, and I'm thinking, you know, he's facing, you know, a Ryan coach defense in New Orleans, who could be an Achilles heel for people. And I'm thinking, you know, he's going to have a big year, but maybe this might be a struggle. And Matt Ryan goes off. He went for 35 from certain leagues in our league, and you saw the Steelers struggle. And the feeling you have when you see that many points sitting on the bench, and you see how far you down, and you just know if you just add that person to the lineup, you're going to win. Y'all know that feeling. It's the hardest feeling to deal with. You feel helpless. You're watching the points go up. The points are going up. Every time you check, it's like your stock. The points are going up, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just wish you throw an interception just so you feel better about it. But it just looks so crazy. And so, you know, Phil PhD, the sports PhD, and Marcus, they gave it to me in the last podcast. Rightly so. I mean, I haven't really won my championship since 2011. You know, I'm starting to feel like Jerry Jones right now. You know, I'm getting to that Jerry Jones. I got a lot of seconds and thirds, so I'm always in the mix. You know, but it's been a few years since I won a championship. I'm not going to say Jerry Jones. I'm more like Belichick. You know, I got the respect, but we still haven't won. And so I got to correct that this year. And then I've been a commissioner for the first time this year. So I did the draft with the commissioner. So I had to really learn. We had the auction draft. And so there's some things that I've done that are really crazy this year. And so it's, we'll talk more about fantasy. You know, if y'all can hit me up on at RSG D Wills on Twitter and give me some of the ways in which you do what you do to help me think through my fantasy game. You know, let's all help D Wills get back to his championship form. That's what we're going to try and do. If this show does nothing else, it helps me get back to our championship form. Well, I'm going to drop a little bit of something here just to kind of keep things going for you for a little bit. And then when we come back, we will bring my man in, Teron Briggs, to talk about the big fight tonight. I know all y'all talking about it. I'm excited about it. The Money Man, Madonna, the whole crew. This is good. I watched the weigh-in. I'm feeling good. But after the break, we'll come back and hear from a person who really thinks about boxing inside and give us some sense on what's happening in the world of boxing, what's happening with this, and also some other things in sports. See you in a minute.
Right about now, you're about to be possessed by the sounds of MC Ross Payton and DJ Easy Rock.
One Mike with D. Wills, our newest podcast. We're going to try and bring it to you, get you going, feeling good about this. There's a big fight going on tonight. Anytime the money team is leading stuff, the energy is wild. If you have never, I was in Vegas one time for, and I'm going to say the music, I have to make sure I say the music was brought to us by DJ Slick, my guy. My guy, DJ Slick, great stuff. I was there for Floyd fight. And the energy is off the hook in Vegas. It was a fight with Zab Judah when they jumped in the ring and had the big fight, the battle. But the energy, it was at the Thomas Mack. I had never understood it. But this guest we have on, he's been around this boxing game a long time. And like I said, you know, we like the wake-up show. You know, it's like, you know, back in the day, Sway and Tech, you know, M used to come on, Big E, all these cats before everybody else knew him used to come on. And then when they saw him, but they still come back to the studio. They still go back to the wake-up show even when they big. And that's what we love about this relationship as Teron Briggs from Boxing.com is coming on with us today. He will talk a little bit about what's going on tonight. We're going to talk about the world of boxing, the state of boxing first. We're going to get into that. But what y'all don't know about this cat, you follow him at Teron Briggs on Twitter, is that he's in the sports game. We're going back and forth. He was on me because we'll talk about this later on. I was led astray with my picks. I got real Midwest on him. And so he took a gentle on me as my team took a kicking last week. But it's good to have you on, brother. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing well, man. How you doing, brother?
Man, I know your energy in your world. The Twitter world is going crazy today. The energy is going crazy. And, you know, we'll certainly get into the events of today because this is, you know, a big fight that we definitely want to talk and break down. And we'll definitely get into some of those things. But I want to start a little big picture. I know we had some movement, I believe that was with HBO in terms of executive leadership. There's some things that look like might be smoothing out between Top Rank and Golden Boy and some of the other things. Is the Cold War in boxing over? Are we on the verge of seeing some really big fights happen with some of these shifts in leadership and some of the pieces? Or is this thing going to continue to go farther and make it more difficult to make some of the fights we really want to see?
Well, I think the key word that you said there is verge. Nothing is official yet. Kevin Ayol of Yahoo Sports did a article this week discussing a recent meeting between Oscar De La Hoya, you know, the CEO, the head of Golden Boy, which is arguably the number one promotional company in boxing right now, and Bob Arum, who is the head of Top Rank, arguably the number one promotional company in boxing right now. And they recently had a meeting. What was discussed there is still unknown. We know right now that no fights between the two promotional companies have been made, but it's certainly a big step that they sat down in a room and talked. So it's just a matter of when is the what fight and when will they actually just get together and stage a co-promotion. But it does seem like that is something that is imminent. And I think, you know, once that first co-promotion happens, that'll sort of be the kickoff of, you know, what I think a lot of boxing fans, boxing insiders as well, hope will be, relationship going forward. Because it's been to the detriment of the sport that the two companies for the last few years have not worked together, have not been willing to do co-promotions and match their fighters. So hopefully we're on the verge of something big happening between the two.
For people, I mean, you're insiders. So, you talk to people. You know, a lot of us are going our day-to-day lives. What was the origin of even the beef? You know, what was the origin of not doing co-promotions? Historically, people, you know, have not liked each other. Don King and other promoters, I mean, they found ways to get deals done. Why hasn't this happened? What's the origin of the whole thing?
Well, many people trace it. I mean, there's no – it's hard to really say the official origin, but it basically seems to have happened sometime in or around 2011, I would say roughly, when Manny Pacquiao basically, his contract with Top Rank, Top Rank had promoted him since he burst on the scene years ago, and his contract with Top Rank was arguably over,
and Golden Boy signed, attempted to sign him at least, and Top Rank ended up coming out and saying basically, you know, this is you guys signed a fighter who was signed to us, and, you know, there's a huge lawsuit that was brought and huge argument, but basically the fight started because Golden Boy, because Top Rank felt like Golden Boy tried to infringe on their what they thought was a contract that they had with Manny Pacquiao, and that was that basically started the fight, and since then it's been pretty much all downhill. The companies have have basically refused to do any sort of promotions together, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, we hope that is coming to end. There's another player in this. Like, what role does Floyd's brand from a promotional thing? I mean, tonight we'll talk a little bit about him as a boxer tonight, but his role as a promoter is also playing a role in some of this now, right? As he's trying to expand himself in the promotion side, what role will he play in the game as it moves forward?
You know, that's yet to be seen. He just recently – he's had a promotional company for quite some time, but they actually haven't been licensed to promote fights, as crazy as that seems.
Okay.
So he's had the company Mayweather Promotions formed, but – and whenever whenever he does a fight – whenever Floyd is fought, he's fought underneath the auspice of Golden Boy, which has been the lead promoter and the promoter of record. But you always see Mayweather Promotions, but Mayweather Promotions actually doesn't even have a legit license in Las Vegas to promote fights up until recently. What role will they play? That's yet to be seen. They haven't staged any major fights yet. A lot of people wonder whether or not they'll actually be a factor in the sport. That's, like I said, that's very much yet to be seen. There's a lot of questions about that. He's certainly got a couple of fighters signed to Mayweather Promotions, or people believe are signed, but no major fighters. A couple guys like Jay Leon Love and a couple of other guys who fight under the TNT banner, but they've that's a huge question mark right there in terms of. What role will they actually play in the big picture in terms of right now the biggest talk is about Roc Nation. If you want to discuss the biggest sort of new promotional company in the sport, Roc Nation is the one that's garnered a lot of headlines, and a lot of people are talking about. I mean, anytime Jay-Z obviously is involved in anything, it's going to it's going to garner a lot of headlines. It's going to get a lot of talk. And Roc Nation is definitely, in terms of new promotional companies, is the one that everyone is talking about right now.
And what's great about that, I mean, and I think, you think about the role of 50, and I think that might have even stunted Floyd's plans a little bit. When you think about the role 50 and Floyd could have played together, and, whatever it is that caused them to go separate ways, they could have been a powerful pair. But when you think about 50 and you think about Roc Nation and you think about New York in fertile ground for catching people early, and you think about that whole kind of tri-state area of potential talent without going around the world, if you can research, that could make things even more dangerous if you think about it from that perspective. I mean, Jay-Z's reach is global, 50's reach, they're global, but they also are natives of an area that has a very fertile boxing space.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, 50's promotional company is licensed in New York. They've staged a number of fights in the tri-state area in New York. None have been major fights. He's yet to actually be the lead promoter for a premium cable fight. So there hasn't been a fight in which 50's company on HBO or Showtime has been the promoter of record, but they have certainly done quite a few smaller cards in and around the tri-state area. They've built some relationships with some venues to stage fights, and it's 50 Cent. You know, anytime you're a fighter, and you know, obviously it's called prize fighting, and
yes, right.
Guys want to make money, you know, and they want to get recognition. And when you allowing yourself with someone who is well known, you know, like a 50 Cent or like a Jay-Z and Roc Nation or like a Mayweather Promotions, it's going to bring instant media attention to you. So, you know, a guy like 50 Cent coming into the boxing game, to the promotional game, he's instantly going to, you know, get a reputation. He's instantly going to attract a lot of fighters who are going to say, oh, wow, you know, if I align myself with 50, you know, what kind of publicity, what kind of big fights, you know, they're thinking this is gonna lead to something, you know, very lucrative potentially.
So let's turn to some boxing a little bit. Last weekend, I mean, we had three boxers that have different stories fighting in U.S. Bank Arena in Cincinnati last week. You had Lucas Matisse, you had Andre Berto, and you had Adrian Broner. And I really enjoy watching this card. It's one of those things where, I mean, to be able to watch it like in Cincinnati, to see a card like this in Cincinnati is a treat when you can get boxing out of the kind of the Mecca environment and get it into some of these other communities and see it. But, I mean, that's a great card to watch. I don't know if you had a chance to watch some of those fights, but let's break down each fight, you know, in terms of from your perspective and what it means for these boxers. In terms of what you saw, let's start with the Matisse, then work to the kind of the Andre Berto, and then let's finish with the Adrian Broner, because I think I really want to get into, you know, what you think he is in terms of his psyche. But walk through the card and kind of your perspective and what you saw and the stories and how they evolved.
Definitely. Well, I think you touched on a key point there, and a lot of boxing insiders, you know, people in the know. It was a great thing. Anytime you have a boxing card that's staged outside of a casino venue, I think it's good for the sport. You know, like you said, this card was staged in Cincinnati, the hometown of the main event fighter Adrian Broner. They reportedly sold something like 6,000 or 7,000 tickets to the fight, and it's just a good thing for the sport. It's a good thing to bring the fights outside of casino venues, because a lot of times casino venues, you know, you're getting a lot of gamblers and stuff who are comp tickets. But when you bring the fight to arenas that are, you know, especially the main event fighter or so-and-so is the hometown guy, you get a whole different atmosphere. You get true boxing fans a lot more. I mean, not to knock the casinos, but you get fans who are truly support the fighters, who come out to see the fights. The card was unexpectedly good. The main event was unexpectedly good. A lot of people looked at the papers looked at the fights on paper and felt like they were mismatches. Like you said, Andre Berto, one of the most well-known fighters in the sport, made his return after suffering a tough loss to almost a year ago, and also apparently having a bad injury to his shoulder. He returned to the ring, and he got a not very spectacular decision over pretty much a club fighter. This guy, Steve Upshur Chambers, a guy who many people thought was going to probably just get knocked out. It was looked at as sort of a showcase fight for Berto to return to the sport after being off for over a year. And he dominated the fight, but he didn't really look that impressive, unfortunately for him. You know, like I said, because – and it's always hard. Whenever you're in a showcase fight or a fight against someone where everyone expects you to beat, it's sort of hard to impress, you know, short of coming out and knocking a guy out in the first round or something. But – the expectations were very high for Berto in that fight, and he really didn't he didn't impress much. He got the W. There was no question about the decision. He certainly won the fight going away, but he didn't show a lot of the explosiveness that that he had displayed earlier in his career. And there are a lot of questions about his future in the sport going forward and whether or not he can actually be a major player. You mentioned Lucas Matisse, who also fought on the card. He got a very there was a lot of people were looking forward to seeing him fight. You know, he's most known for his decision loss to Danny Garcia last year on the undercard of a Floyd Mayweather fight, which was one of the best fights of the year in 2013. He lost a 12 round decision to Garcia. He beat a guy, an unknown guy, Roberto Ortiz, excuse me. The fight was very controversial ending, and that the referee appeared to not allow Ortiz to have a full 10 count. I mean, you know, you don't have to, most people.
He stopped it at 9.
Yeah, I mean, you saw that fight, right? Which was kind of crazy. I mean, I don't know if, you know, listen, I studied Spanish in high school, but I always thought Nueve was 9. But in boxing, 10 is supposed to be the count that you counted out at. But it surely seemed like he said Nueve 9 and basically counted this guy out. So there was some controversy there in regards to that ending. But Matisse landed an awesome body blow that dropped Ortiz. And he appeared to get up and beat the count. The referee waved him off, waved the fight off. It was a good victory for Matisse. Matisse had one fight after the Garcia loss. That was a tougher than expected fight. A win over a 10-round win over Molina, which he knocked him out. But for Matisse, basically there's going to be a big fight for him in the future. He's managed by one of the biggest names in the sport in terms of managers, the biggest name in the sport actually, Al Haymon. And there's a lot of talk about
Al is like the godfather, man. Al Haymon is like the god. He just be smiling and making money.
Man, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Marlon Brando got nothing on this guy, man. He is I think they're saying that he's I saw an article recently that said he had signed right now in his stable. He had something like 120 plus fighters right now, but there is. You know, a lot of people, you throw out the term arguably, someone is arguably, you know, so-and-so, or, you know, Top Rank is arguably the biggest promotional company. There's no arguing about the fact that Al Haymon is the biggest manager in the sport, and he manages Lucas Matisse, and the guy that you also mentioned who headlined the card in his hometown in Cincinnati, Adrian Broner. Lucas Matisse called out Adrian Broner and said, I want to fight him, and Adrian Broner called out Matisse and said, I want to fight him. So Broner got a much-needed victory in the main event in what was one of the best fights of 2014. He got a 12-round decision over Emmanuel Taylor, who's a good fighter. I don't think any.
I really liked him. He's 23 years old.
You like who? Taylor.
Really, Taylor. I mean, he. When you watch him, he has a sharpness to him, and his for a 23-year-old in that environment, he was composed. I was very impressed about his future. I mean, I'll let you go in it, but I was.
Yeah.
He impressed me in a way that I did not expect.
Yeah. No. You and everyone else. Taylor lost the fight. He lost a 12-round decision, but his stock certainly improved because he acquitted himself very well. A lot of people thought that that it was kind of a showcase fight for Broner. Broner is managed by Al Haymon, and he suffered a tough 12-round decision loss to Marcos Maidana, who's obviously fighting Floyd Mayweather tonight. And they're trying to sort of bring Broner back, you know, after suffering that tough loss, trying to bring him back to the top level. And Emmanuel Taylor was considered a guy who was a tough fighter, but not a top-tier fighter, not on the level of a Maidana or, you know, a Lucas Matisse. And, you know, hey, hats off to Emmanuel Taylor, because he came and he fought like a guy who was a top-tier fighter, you know, even though he might not be considered one. He came and he gave Adrian Broner all kinds of hell for 12 rounds. He, like you said, his composure, I mean, he was fighting in enemy territory. He was fighting in Cincinnati,
yes,
Adrian Broner's hometown. And if you looked at his, you know, looked at his face, his demeanor, he was, man, he was focused, bro. He was focused. Yeah.
Yes.
I totally agree with you there. And he, you know, I had to fight.
When Broner knocked him down in the 12th, that was one of those moments where you say, if Broner's gonna realize his potential, this was the moment. This young man was giving up, and when he hit him, there's a times in fights where you yell. I'm sitting there and I yell. I thought I was gonna wake my wife up. I yelled because it was such a spectacular shot.
I mean, this was technical, and then he hit him with that, and I looked at Broner in a different way. And what I thought was special about him that separated him from Floyd a little bit, that he had some Floyd tendencies. But what was great about Broner, he's not afraid to brawl. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I jumped out of my seat, literally. This is the moment.
That 12th round is going to be in contention for round of the year on a lot of people's scorecard, when the year is finished and people look back and they name, you know, fight of the year, round of the year, fighter of the year. That's certainly going to be in contention because the 12th round of that fight was excellent. I mean, if you're a fan of boxing, if you were watching that fight, it was hard not to be excited. The guys exchanged some hellacious blows, man. And then, like you said, with just a little bit of time left on the clock in the 12th round, Broner sealed the victory for himself when he knocked down Taylor. After I thought that Taylor had won the round, to be honest with you, up until that point, I thought that he
yes.
dished out the most punishment in that round. And Broner literally took the fight when he knocked him down. And you know, hey, hats off to him. It was a close fight to that point. Whether you had Broner ahead or you had it dead even, or even maybe possibly Taylor ahead, it was certainly close. And even though it was in Broner's hometown, so he could have just as easily have sort of tried to skate to the victory and just assume that, you know, the judges, I'm in my hometown and, you know, the judges are going to give me this fight. And he didn't, you know, so hats off to Broner in that regard. He came out in that 12th round and he fought to win the fight. He didn't just try to, you see sometimes you see guys just hold on and try to get the decision victory. He didn't hold on. He went out there and he tried to win the fight. He tried to knock out Taylor. Taylor tried to knock him out. And like I said, it turned out to be an unexpectedly awesome fight, man.
And do you think, I mean, one of the things I've noticed, and I don't know if you just, I love kind of watching, because, you know, you understand this, you watch enough fights, you can see the evolution of a person. I saw the braggadocious Broner with better timing around his braggadociousness, meaning his stuff was appropriate. His ring walk had what it needed to be, but there was a business-like approach to him in the ring and through kind of the interview point that was different. Did you notice that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think he was a guy who was, you know, a lot of people were saying, maybe only a few people were saying, was the next possible Floyd Mayweather, or the next superstar of the sport. And when he lost last year to Marcos Maidana, I think he thought he was the next superstar of the sport. He thought he was the next Floyd Mayweather. That was a huge awakening. You know, anytime a guy suffers his first loss, a lot of times it can sort of wake them up and realize that, oh, wow, I'm not as, you know, I'm maybe not as good as I thought I was, or maybe I'm not approaching this game the way I need to. And you did see that a little bit more with him. You saw him acting more like a professional, sort of not, you know, in a lot of his previous fights before the McDonough loss, he had kind of, you know, he just rested on his talent. I mean, because he's an immensely talented guy. He's got, you know, great hand speed, very good power. But a lot of times, you know, he just sort of, he thought that, oh, wow, you know, that's all I need. You know, I'm so talented, I don't really need to work too hard. And I think the McDonough loss made him realize, and then also having Floyd Mayweather as a kind of mentor in the sport, he realizes that, you know, it's about hard work and dedication. Like Mayweather says, you know, if you don't, you can't just rely on your talent. You gotta put the work in the gym. You gotta be focused, because, you know, anytime you're a star, anytime you're a guy who's a main event fighter, and you're fighting a guy like Emmanuel Taylor, Taylor came in there and he wanted that spot. He wanted, you know, Emmanuel Taylor wanted to be a star. He wanted to knock off Broner. And if Broner wasn't focused and wasn't concentrated, then, you know, he would have gotten his second loss last weekend. So, yeah, I agree with you. You definitely see more professionalism. I think you could still even see more from him, and I think he's going to need to display more as he – now that he's going to probably start fighting top-tier fighters, especially if he fights a guy like Matisse, who's nicknamed the Machine and is one of the biggest punchers in the sport. He's going to have to even show more professionalism as he approaches a guy like that potentially.
All right, you listen to Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're here with Teron Briggs, and we're going to take a break and come back and get into the big fight and much more around sports with Boxing Insider from Boxing.com, Teron Briggs.
What up, everybody? It's your boy, DJ Slick, rocking it here, 815, doing with the RSG Real Sports Guys.
We're not against rappers, but we are against those thugs.
You're listening to RSG One Mic. It's with D. Wills, brought to you by XL Academics, changing mentoring with a world-class cloud solution. XL Academics is connecting the world through mentorship. Learn more about XL University product line by going to realsportsguys.com and clicking on the logo. Contact us at realsportsguys.com if you'd like to be a sponsor for the RSG movement. We're also brought to you by On the Rocks. On the Rocks is one of Rockford's, Illinois' newest sports and urban entertainment establishments, a place where you can go get some food with a little Southern charm, enjoy watching sports, great R&B music. Go to realsportsguys.com, click on the On the Rocks logo. Tell my man Craig and the folks over there who got some really good food that the Real Sports Guys sent you. All right, we're back here. My guy, Ron Briggs, who is the man. I love following him. You got to follow him at Teron Briggs on Twitter. Great follow on a number of levels that I think is important. Before we get into fight, there's a couple things that I want to get your opinion on, and then we'll get into, you know, analyzing the fight, what you thought about the first fight, what you think needs to happen with their fight plan as they try to get to this fight, and then we'll get into some other things around sports that I know you and I have gone back and hit on Twitter, and I've watched some of those things I think you have had reactions to as well. The game is shifting around a lot. People might not be paying attention to boxing a lot, you know, but this kind of pound-for-pound list is kind of like that gatekeeper for who is what, when, where, what, and how it all shakes out in terms of the boxing game. I know as insiders, you know, it's kind of like, you know,
you know, sports folks who are ranking college football, they're on their own, and the power rankings for NFL, y'all kind of come up with your own kind of pound for pound. Y'all have y'all sense for who's what. Who are your top 10? Who's your pound for pound that you have in the top 10?
I got to say, D, I'm not a big top 10 guy, man. I'm not a big pound for pound guy, man. Not to rain on your parade, bro. Hey, I respect, you know, and there's certainly some noted boxing writers who have top 10 things, you know, and it makes sense. Sort of in college football, it makes sense in a lot of the sports. But boxing is so unique with the different categories, the different weight, you know, the weight classes. To me, it's almost impossible. I mean, listen, you want to do a – I'm not going to do a top 10. The best fighter pound for pound right now is Floyd Mayweather. There's – I don't think anyone
else
has a
question. Let me give you another way to do it.
Yeah.
Let me give you another way to do it. Let's do it like a shirt size. Because I respect what you're saying. Let's do it like a shirt size. So if you are saying small, medium, large, so you know if you broke boxing into like these smaller fighters, so you know who's your elite? Like you know if you chose, you could whatever cutoff you want to do, all the way down to flyweight or whatever the lowest weights are, and then you got this kind of middle round that's kind of welter through light heavyweight, or if you want to go you know light welterweight, however you want to look at. To, you know, light middleweight or whatever, and then you got above that kind of that range. If you were dividing them into those kind of categories, which I think would be, you could see people crossing over into each other in different ways. Like Roy Jones Jr. went up to heavyweight. It was kind of fixed and whatever, but there's a range where they're in that same ballpark. If you were kind of going small, medium, large, if you were picking people out of those categories, how would you do it? We might even come up with something new off of this. You and I might do this. Come with a whole new way of doing it. This is what we do at RSG. Let's play with this, man, because you and I will come back and we'll develop our own metric on this.
There we go, man. I respect that. Listen, you want to say large? Listen, large is basically the best fighters in the sport. Obviously, Floyd Mayweather is one of them. Manny Pacquiao is a large. Andre Ward, though we've seen him fight so infrequently in recent years, because he's currently battling with his promoter Dan Goosen, so he hasn't fought in I think it's almost a year now or maybe more. But he's definitely a large there. Adonis Stevenson, the WBC and ring light heavyweight. Champion is probably a large, you know, Vladimir Klitschko, the reigning heavyweight champion. I don't even know which belts he has exactly, but he's certainly the class of that division and one of the class fighters in the sport. So you know, those are certainly some of the guys that are up there. You know, on a second tier, you got guys like Adrian Broner. And Lucas Matisse, maybe even a Guillermo Rigondeaux, who a lot of people don't know, who's a very good technical fighter. Also in that first class, on a large, you got a guy like Gennady Golovkin, who's considered to be the best middleweight fighter in the world. He's got a huge fight coming.
Yeah, everybody's scared up.
Yeah. He's a boogeyman. That's what they call him, the boogeyman of boxing. He's kind of got a reputation like a Mike Tyson, like Mike. You know, in his early years, he's a guy who's knocking out a lot of guys, and a lot of guys are afraid to get in the ring with him because he's just been a knockout artist. But he's up there. You know, in terms of medium, you probably got a guy like Miguel Cotto, who's on that next tier. You know. A guy who has previously been one of the best fighters in the sport. He's kind of rebuilt his reputation, rebuilt his status. He's not quite on that top level, but he's sort of just right below it. You don't have many guys at the top, but there are definitely a few who have sort of you know risen above the competition, risen above the names to make themselves elite fighters, elite names in the sport.
Well, you and I are going to play with this, and so as we get back together, we're going to cover our own ranking, whether it's a small fighter in terms of the lower weights or a middle of the middle weights, or if it's just large, big, small in terms of their appeal, where they are. You and I, let's work on this over time, come up with our own kind
Definitely.
Of system. We started RSG. This is how we do it. We'll come up with something. We got the main event. Folks trying to reach into their wallets, trying to figure out where they're going to put their money. Folks are already arguing at the barbershop, getting their hair cut, got their party set up tonight. I got a couple of invitations going on. Man, it's crazy. The energy around this fight. Walk us through your impressions of the first fight. And then kind of how you see the game plan's got to evolve. We're not going to get to you making a prediction yet. We're just going to have you just kind of talk about the things that they need to be doing in their game plan and kind of stuff around that. And then I do want to, because we had this crossover, and we'll get to it at the end, is, you know, Floyd finds a way to make some comment on things. And so he did comment on Ray Rice's situation, which will get us into some other conversations that I know.
Who's this, Ray,
you know,
Ray, who's Ray Rice?
I'm just kidding, man.
It's early.
It's early over here. But, yeah, we all should know Ray by now. I'm like, my goodness.
Oh, man. You don't need to be a football fan or a fan of sports to know who Ray Rice is.
Well, I opened up and I said, anytime NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams opens up with you before he opens up with ISIS, you in trouble. You know, you are Nightly News and you leading ahead of a terrorist organization that everybody afraid of, then you in trouble. You in trouble, Roger Dale. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But let's start with the first fight. And kind of, you know, you and I talked a little bit about this, and you kind of going in this. But, like, give me a summation of how you thought about that first fight. And then what does that mean for the kind of game plans and adjustments they need to make now?
Yeah, well, the first fight is the reason why we're having a second fight, because it was a close fight. I don't know of any writers who had McDonough winning the first fight, but it was definitely a lot. You know, certainly he won a number of rounds, and you know, if you follow Floyd Mayweather over the last, you know, few years, it's not often that a fighter wins rounds against him. Even, you know, a guy like Canelo Alvarez, who was, you know, one of the best fighters in the sport, who maybe, you know, arguably a medium or large, only won one round, probably, or two rounds at most against Floyd. So Marcos Maidana came out in that first fight, and he worked behind his jab. You know, he's a guy who's trained by Robert Garcia, who's one of the most well-known trainers in the sport. He's been working with him for the last year, couple of years, just recent fights. And Maidana showed some things that a lot of people hadn't seen before. He was known as a slugger, as a brawler, and he certainly slugs, he certainly brawled, but he also displayed a, like I said, a very sharp jab. And early in the fight, you can see he clearly troubled Floyd. Now, Floyd says that he felt like he fought dirty, which maybe he did. You know, he certainly what you saw in that first fight was that Maidana didn't show Floyd the kind of respect that a lot of guys had shown him before, in terms of they were afraid to try to hurt him, or, you know, afraid to maybe throw a low blow or throw something, you know. Maidana had no fear of Floyd. He came to win that fight, and he acquitted himself pretty well. Floyd won. He certainly won the fight. I thought he won the fight very, very clearly. I think off the top of my head, I sort of scored the fight something like 116 to 112.
Yeah, I think that was the same word.
Yeah, basically like 8-4. But early in the fight, you saw Floyd actually have to really defend himself. You saw that that he was in a little bit of trouble. So that's why we have the second fight tonight. That's why we have the rematch, because Maidana did and going into the fight, people didn't really expect much from him, even though he was coming off of a big upset win against Adrian Broner. People thought that he was just going to be a walk in the park for Floyd, and he turned out not to be. So
when that fight, the first fight was made, I was nervous. Because I saw it was
get out of here.
And I was nervous. I thought it was going to be Rocky against Apollo Creed type thing. And I was like, this is not a cat. There's a few cats you don't want to get, and this is one of them. And I was surprised he took it. You know, and I was happy to see how he fought through it. But, yeah, I don't think some of those things are going to change in the second fight. But I like it. So they're making adjustments. So if you're in Madonna's corner, what do you do more of? What do you do less of?
If I'm in
your Floyd's corner, what do you do more of, and what do you do less of?
Well, if you're in Madonna's corner, you realize that, like I said, that he got a very good start to the first fight. But he kind of, I don't know if it was a stamina issue. I don't know if it was because of the adjustments that Floyd made. But he wasn't able to carry that same aggression into the later rounds. So we've seen it in All Access, that Showtime has done, that McDonough's been working on his stamina. He's been working on being able to fight every round like it's the first round. So you go into this fight and you say you want to do a lot of the same things that you did in the first fight. You want to set up your power shots behind your jab. That was the most surprising thing for McDonough, was that, you know, that he used his jab to sort of locate Floyd to get him within his range, and then he threw those big clubbing shots after that. And you just want to continue to do a lot of what you did in the first fight, in the first few rounds of the first fight, throughout the fight. You want to not give Floyd any respect. You know, that too many times guys are, you know, they kind of do what Victor Ortiz did. You know, you're like, you don't want to take it to him, and to beat him, that's what you got to do. So that's from McDonough's, the people in McDonough's corner, they've got to just stress that to him, the need to, you know, and most importantly, I'm sure in his training and stuff like that, is that, you know, he's got to display that aggressiveness throughout the full fight, you know, not just early on. He can't afford to get tired, because a guy like Floyd, he's just waiting, and that's what he did in the first fight. He just waited, sort of waited out McDonough's aggression, and in the second half, he took over and forced his will on it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, from Floyd's perspective, you got to do what you did in the second half of that fight. You got to be composed. Yeah. We're going to have a different referee. They had Tony Weeks, who was a referee who a lot of people thought didn't necessarily do a great job, and Tony Weeks is one of the more well-known and better referees, more well-respected refs in the game. We got Kenny Bayless, who is arguably, because you throw the term arguably out there again, arguably the best referee, or certainly one of the best referees in the sport. We expect that he's not going to let any, maybe some of the things that McDonough might got away with in the first fight, in terms of some maybe dirty shots, or shots that were, you know, behind the head or something like that. He's not going to let that get away. But if you're Floyd, you want to do what Floyd does well. You want to maintain your composure. At this point in his career, Floyd doesn't use his legs as much as he did when he was younger for his defense. He's using that patented shoulder roll and little feints and stuff like that to make fighters miss. Well, you want to do that, and you want to just continue to pressure McDonough, man.
And I think, you know, and what people, and this is what I love about Broner, that he doesn't get enough credit for, because people get caught up with all the hysteria. And I always say that with both these fighters, turn down the volume and just watch the action. Like, don't get caught up in all that. The one thing Floyd did, and I think it paid off later on, but I think he's got to establish it even earlier, is the short shots to the body. So the kind of thing that forces
Madonna to think about defense as well. And I saw in those middle rounds as he started building up on some of those short body punches when they were having those exchanges early on, he started guarding for some of those shots. And yeah, I know in the All Access he talks about they didn't feel anything, but you could tell he was respecting those body shots. I don't care how good you are. You know, you can take a lot in the head, but sometimes that body will take some energy from you. Do you think those body shots early on, like I say, putting it in the bank, you see Floyd doing more of that work?
Yeah, no. That's an excellent point. You know, with the when you're facing a big puncher, you want to do everything possible to sort of take away their power, to negate their power, and one of the ways to do that is to attack the body, you know, attack their foundation. You know, a guy is not so. Certainly, you expect that. You expect that Floyd will do more of that. Anytime you throw punches to a guy's body, though, you also it can be dangerous. You open yourself up.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see just how much Floyd is willing to focus on a body. But I think you saw a little bit of that, like you said, which I think is an excellent point in that first fight, that that might have been something that contributed to Madonna not being as strong in the second half of the first fight, was the fact that Floyd did target his body, and Floyd is the most accurate puncher in the sport. He's a great counter puncher, and he's a great, you know, when he throws, he doesn't throw a ton of shots in a fight, but when he does, he is very, he lands them, and definitely attacking Madonna's body and focusing on that early could pay a huge dividend for him later in the fight as he wears down his guy.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, promotion is a lot of stuff. Floyd will always say something that will cause some conversation. And obviously, we talked about Ray Rice, which, you, like I said, again, when any subject is leading ahead of ISIS or ISIL or whatever, however they look at it, you know, you got an issue that everybody is spilling out with in NFL. You and I talk a lot about sports. You know, we both, I think, have made a major commitment to our education and our own development. The lens in which we see sports, we see it as part of the fabric of society, not separate. A lot of fans, a lot of people try to see this as a reprieve, but we know that there's a lot of intersection between the real world and sports. In general, what was your reaction to Floyd's comments with that? But as we see the stuff in the NFL and the social issues in the intersection of sports and Danny Ferry and all these different things where, you know, there are a number of reactions because of the way in which people come to understand their sports, creates this kind of conversation. You know, what were some of your reactions when you heard Floyd, and what have you been reacting to some of these things, even around the conversation around Ray Rice and just what it means to be connected and attached to a lot of these larger social issues?
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I definitely kind of I cringed a bit when I heard Mayweather's, when I heard Floyd's comment on or comments on the Ray Rice situation. He later retracted those comments, you know, basically sort of which a lot of people thought was him defending Ray Rice. He later retracted those statements and said that he actually hadn't seen the video that it seems like the world has seen by now, the TMZ video of Rice striking his girlfriend. He said that he actually hadn't seen that when he made his comments, and that, you know, that he wouldn't have said the same thing he said, basically, you know, sort of criticizing, because he basically criticized the NFL for changing their suspension from two games to I guess giving him
the indefinite. I think they might have
indefinite. Exactly, the indefinite.
Yeah.
So Floyd said that, you know, that he wasn't aware of everything that had transpired. So he took that back. I mean, it's a tough thing, you know. His advisor, whatever you want to call it, Leonard Ellerbe, who's sort of said, you know, to end up eventually telling reporters, you know, please don't ask Floyd about this issue. Floyd is a fighter. He's a boxer. You know, we only want to discuss they only want to discuss boxing related things, and specifically things regarding that fight. You know, it's a tough thing. You know, Floyd is not the only one who's made controversial controversial statements about it. You've seen Paul George do it, and a number of other athletes say things that are, it's a tough thing. I mean, you know, anytime you're talking about the abuse of women, you know, it's a very dicey subject, and these guys aren't any more qualified to speak about it than the average man. And Floyd made some comments that, you know, obviously he regretted saying.
Yeah. And one of the things, I just want to give a few minutes before we get to your prediction, because most people, I'm going to expand your brand a little bit here. You're a person, you know, you're a liberal arts educated young man. You know, we both come from that small college liberal arts background, value of that. And so, you know, you stretching a whole bunch of things. I know you watched the league, NFL. What were some of your observations, some of your surprises, and some of the things that disappointed you when you watched your NFL football this past weekend?
Yeah, well, I'm a New York guy. I'm a Jets, a huge Jets fan. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. I got to get that out there. So, you know, it's so crazy. Everyone's talking about the whole Ray Rice situation. People forgot that football has actually started almost. It's kind of crazy. But I thought it was an awesome first weekend in the sport, awesome kickoff weekend. It was there were definitely some sort of shocking results. I was shocked that the Patriots lost in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly thought that they would win that game. I was kind of that was something that was a bit surprising to me. I was surprised by the Bears' loss at home to Buffalo. I know you're a Midwest guy. I don't think you're a Bears fan, but
no.
I'm sure you. Yeah, no.
I'm a Steelers fan. I mean, that college sports where you were right. I just went 0-3. And you tried to take me, you tried to save me, like, I knew you were going to come Midwest with this. I just took a beating on that one. All right, goodness. Michigan State, Michigan.
Oh, man, how did you end up being a Steelers fan, man? I think you were Midwest all the way through, bro.
Man, you know the Lions, man. I'm from the Detroit area, Southeastern Michigan, A-Square. And the Lions have never, I always say, name a person who's coached the Lions and gone on to coach another team. You can't name it. You can't have an organization with Billy Sims and the great running backs that they've had in players and receivers and not win at some point. So that's
true story. That's true, bro. That's true.
But
man.
We got a little bit of time here. No
okay.
prediction. Who do you got and why?
Okay. Well, just to let the. Listeners out there know that they can find my prediction on boxing.com, my official prediction, in an article in a prediction column that ran yesterday. But I am surprise. I'm picking the 8-1 favorite, which I think a lot of sports books have Floyd Mayweather as. I think that he's going to win a decision. He's won decisions in something like 9 of his last 11 fights. He's won decisions, whether it be unanimous decisions or majority decisions. Unanimous, you know, obviously all three judges agreeing, or majority is 2 out of 3. I think he'll win a unanimous tonight. I think all three judges will see him winning the fight. I don't think he's going to knock McDonough down. I think it's going to be a fairly entertaining fight because I think McDonough is going to bring the same mentality, the aggressive mentality that he brought in the first fight. He's going to bring that back. But I think that Floyd's accurate shots are what's going to win the day for him. I think it's composure, and I think that it's going to be probably. I think he's going to win the fight more in a bigger way than he did the first fight. So I could see something maybe like a 118, 110, or something like that. Basically, see Floyd winning maybe like 9 rounds or maybe even 10 this time around.
All right, you heard it. This is what's going on. This is One Mike with D-Bills on with Teron Briggs. Brother, thanks for being on. I look forward to having you on again
on
this,
helping me launch
this podcast, man. I appreciate it, and we'll definitely have you on again and talk about other things in sports, and you can follow him at Teron Briggs on Twitter. Great follow. Where else can they follow you again?
You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me at boxing.com. I'm in talks right now. I can't mention much about it, but I'm sure the next time I come on with you guys to write for another a new entry in the boxing game, a new website that it looks like I'm going to be working with in the future. So I'm really excited about that opportunity. Twitter's where I live recently, man. So definitely everyone can follow me on Twitter. It's going to be awesome.
All right. That's One Mic, y'all. Catch us out. Go to realsportsguys.com to catch all of our stuff, some of our classic stuff. Get us up on iTunes. We drop each single on the album for your calendar year. This is D. Wills. Till next time, One Mic. We out.